Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to, welcome to Chicago Outfit Blood on the Streets. This is your host, Wayne Klingman, with, once again, a very exciting show. Now, I don't know what you guys do for a living. I really don't care. I'm sure you guys are doing all kinds of interesting things, but I am blessed. I'm truly blessed. Because when I'm down and out, I'm in my bunker. I got Cocaine Bear out there running cover for me. I got the gun balls working that serpent pole for me. I'm doing what it takes. I am truly blessed to have some of the best people in the known world come on my show, make those connections, and bring you their expertise. And with the news going on today, with what's going on with these coasts, we all know about the latest mafia hit out in New York. I thought it would be a really good thing to bring in probably, I think, one of the best know-it geniuses when it comes to what's going on in Buffalo and the East Coast I've met in my life. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, stand and applaud the great, the fantastically cool, the very, very good-looking, famous guy himself, Anthony Scalepi, who I probably mispronounced his last name horribly. Good morning, sir.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. Say a lot of great things there, but man, you're building me up. You're going to give me a big head. I don't know what I'm going to do with that. Somebody's going to have to put a hit on me just to deflate that. So, you know.
Well, I had to do something to make sure the bombs weren't kept being planted in my car, you know. We go with a lot of people that way. So I'm thinking if I give you some due respect, maybe we'd get a few less planted.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate all the kind words there. I don't know if I'd go as far as you went with all of that, but I appreciate your faith in me and the things that I got to say here. And, it's fun to be on a program like this and to talk about some of the things that I'm interested in and especially the mob here in Buffalo. And I'm looking forward to the conversation today.
Daniel, well, first of all, can you please pronounce your name for us correctly, sir?
Anthony Scapoletti. And, so that's hard for some people to say, especially the Scapoletti part. And so maybe you just want to call me Scaps, so that's fine. My friends do that. And if I hear Scap, I know you're talking to me. So, yeah.
Yes, sir. Well, I understand that most people know either call you sir or kind sir if they know if they like to see the light of the next day is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
So anyway, sir, what is the situation in Buffalo? Because until recently, I didn't even know anything organized crime-wise was happening out there.
It's very interesting what's happening here in Buffalo, and it's funny that you say that you haven't heard a lot or even really anything about Buffalo and the crime family that is here. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that most people, even most mob watchers, believe the family was very old and decrepit, if not completely defunct. Matter of fact, if you go back and do some research into crime family here, you know it was under Magadino, one of the strongest families in the country, right up there with the five in New York, if not stronger than some of the five there. But, in the 90s, there was a concerted effort to put the family on the ropes. They really, the federal government got in and found out about their connection to Labor's Union 210, and that put that local under government trusteeship. And so really about 1998, I think trusteeship was in the late 90s there. And in 98, they were starting to say that, the Buffalo family is a shell of its former self. They call it the withered arm because, that's another name for the Buffalo crime family, the arm, because it had a long arm extended, all the way to Rome, Utica, up into Toronto, southern Ontario, probably out to Erie in Pennsylvania, and maybe even had some connections to Youngstown and the like. And
So what we're saying is not an interstate, but it's also international.
Yeah, you know, it's been a large, powerful family, and it's been in decline. You know, Dan Herbeck from the Buffalo News wrote an article, I believe it was 2017, March 2017, and basically said the family was dead. The FBI is quoted as saying that, you know, there's only a few remnants of older folks that remain, that Joe Todaro was basically out of the family, not involved in the racket, and that he was just involved in running his very successful La Nova Pizzeria on the west side of Buffalo. And I don't know if you know, but it's a place that anybody who's anybody in Buffalo goes to. Really, I do think they've got the best pizza around. And, you know, I know I stop on there on a regular basis to get me a slice and just to look around, see what's going on, that type of thing. So, yeah.
Crazy. So, yeah. You also mentioned Rome. If I remember my New York State geography, that's near Fort Drum, is it not?
You know, I am not real good at geography, but that is, you know, you're getting out, you know, you go Rochester and out toward Rome is just a little bit further out that way. So, you know, Rochester was always said to be under Buffalo's command for the most part, except after probably maybe 1968, 69, 70 in there. When the federal government found like $500,000 in Peter Magadino's home, I believe it was. And that year, Magadino, the greedy man that he was, didn't give his capos and his top soldiers their yearly Christmas bonuses, saying that money was too tight. And so when the feds found all of that money, that really put these guys through the roof, and really the crime family at that point broke into factions. And, you know, we had the Rochester faction that became its own family at that time. You had the Niagara Falls faction, which kind of stayed loyal to Magadino, and then the Buffalo faction as well. And even within the Buffalo faction, there were probably some sub-factions within it, too. So that began the decline of the family. They warred amongst themselves for probably 10 to 15 years. And it seemed like there was a hit going on, you know, every other month, or, you know, there were tons and tons of unsolved murders at that point. And they did a number on themselves, too. It wasn't just the feds. Really, they kind of broke into factions and did a number on themselves and were in a weakened state when the feds started to really move in and try to put a kibosh on their operations. I will say Joe Todaro Sr. Is really credited for beginning to unite that family and put it back together and make it much more a force to be reckoned with. I think he enabled its Canadian factions to work together with its New York State factions, and even expanded into Las Vegas and the such. So, yeah.
Wow. Now, okay, we got lots of things we can write there. So we have, okay, we know that the feds did a number of them. We know that they did some killings of their own people, right? We established that.
Yep.
And I know I'm a good 500-600 miles away from New York State, probably a little bit longer, so I can understand why I in the Midwest did not hear about it. But I know people who are involved in true crime in Chicago area, other places around the United States, and obviously they're not here talking with us now, but I would say that the vast majority would have told me before this morning that there's nothing worthwhile going on in Buffalo for the last, what, say, 15, 20 years. But obviously,
yeah,
there's a lot more than meets the eye. Have they learned, perhaps, that the best thing to do is keep quiet whenever possible?
You know, I really think that is the case. As a matter of fact, I think it was 2012, Ron Fino wrote his book, The Triangle Exit, with about his time in the Buffalo crime family. Of course, you know, his father was a boss or acting boss,
right,
maybe kind of boss in name. They really don't know for sure exactly what his role was, but
right.
He had an article to the Buffalo News, Buffalo News, an article on him, I should say, and he wrote them back and basically said, you know, the crime family is operating clandestinely, but, you know, we shouldn't think that they do not exist. They know that they're being watched, and so they are working under the radar. And I always found that very interesting. One of the things that he intimated in that article was that the leadership of Local 210 that was supposed to have, they were supposed to, under the federal trusteeship, remove all of the mob influences. But he mentioned the fact that even in 2012, the current leadership of Local 210 was made up of people who were close associates and loyal to Joe Todaro. And so he very much questioned whether the trusteeship really did its job and whether the mob influence was totally removed from the local. And, you know, some folks, I understand, don't necessarily buy everything that Fino says, but, you know, I always kind of hung on to that a little bit, and I would actually, given the recent information that has come out about the Buff, probably right, because, you know, we've had this recent information. We had the arrests in Ontario of the Violi brothers in 2017, and the Canadian papers were talking about the fact that members of the Todaro crime family were arrested, but we didn't hear about that at all in Buffalo. And you would think, because that Todaro crime family, they're based out of Buffalo, and you know, do a little research, and you see that the FBI in New York City, because some Bananos were arrested as well, they mentioned the fact that Toderos were arrested in Canada. And so that began, I would say, the discussion on whether the Buffalo crime family really still existed, if it was still active. And, you know, I was one that, yeah, it does. But others are saying, no, we haven't seen anything for so many years, it can't. And then we have just a few months ago, this huge, huge revelation that Dominic Violi is the underboss for the Buffalo crime family. And he and his brother Joe, or Giuseppe Violi, were arrested in that O'Crimmins operation in Canada for where the undercover agent was probably a member of the Bananos at that point, had all of this on wire. And, you know, as Violi, in some of those conversations, I guess Violi said that not only was he the underboss of Buffalo, but that, you know, there were 30 men that he beat out for the position, that there are 30 men that he had direct control over as a result, which, you know, in this day and age, that's saying a good little bit, you know, for a family that everybody thought was defunct to all of a sudden say that there's an administration, there's an organization, that there have been significant arrests, that they have ties to the Bananos and maybe others in Montreal. That's saying a whole lot. And I think that makes me question whether the media in Western New York has had it correct all of these years. And it makes you want to go back and to look at everything and to see, okay, did we miss something? Are there other things that are here that show that the crime family has been active all of this time.
Right. It's fascinating, to say the least. It's just touching a bit of the things that you said. First of all, I've had the honor of having Mr. Fino on this show, and I've interacted with him online a couple of times, and absolutely he's a wonderful human being. I can't say enough good things about him. And if he says something to me about something he knows about, as in what's going on with the mafia, say I'm going to take his word for it.
Yeah, and I would too. You know, of course, people had me kind of questioning that
right.
a little bit. I believed him, but, you know, for, you know, a lot of people that watch this stuff really had some good arguments on why you shouldn't, but I think with the recent information, wow, you know, it shows
yeah.
he was kind of right on the ball. And, you know, even in that book, he mentions the fact that Leonard Falzone was likely a front boss for the Toderos the whole time. Even when they thought that the family was dead, just to, so that the Toderos looked like they weren't involved anymore. And,
right. Which makes me, which makes me question some things going on in the Midwest, but that's perhaps for a later part of the show. I find this whole fascinating. Now, let's go to Montreal for a moment. If I'm correct, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that one of the things that the Buffalo Mob has done really, really well is use front groups to do some of their dirty work, as in this case, the Hells Angels.
Yeah, and this is really something that I found out recently, was that the Buffalo Mob, especially its Canadian crews, its Canadian factions, have worked very closely with outlaw motorcycle groups. And, you know, I have, I don't know if you remember back in 97, John Papalia, which was their captain in the Hamilton, Ontario area, southern Ontario there. He was hit by the Mustanos, and Kenny Murdoch was the actual gunman. I can't verify this 100%, but the more and more research I do, the more I hear that a lot of that may have had to do with the fact that Papalia didn't want to work with the outlaw bikers nearly as much as, say, the other organized crime groups in the region. And, you know, that was at the point, I believe, when the Rizzutos were beginning to make a move and were becoming much more powerful. They were flexing their muscle in the Toronto, Ontario, Hamilton area a little bit. They worked with the Angels and outlaw biker groups a great deal. And so, you know, you can't help but wonder if the Buffalo family at that time was realizing this and knew their need to be tied to, and their ability, knew they needed to have the ability to work with the Rizzutos and stuff, because they were becoming much more powerful in the Montreal area. And so they had Papalia. I wouldn't say that they ordered the hit, but they gave permission for it. We've got evidence of this in that there's some documents floating out there that show that the Mustanos were continuing to work with the Buffalo crime family after that hit in 1998. And so you would think if the Mustanos were hitting the Buffalo captain because they were wanting to take over Buffalo's rackets, that there would be bad blood. You wouldn't see Buffalo working with them like we do in that deck. And it makes you think that this was all part of a plan, or, you know, and that Buffalo wasn't nearly as weak as some people were saying at that point in 1999. Mike Lee Popola, in his article in the Buffalo News. So, yeah.
It wouldn't be the first time that a newspaper got something wrong, and worse to say, it wouldn't be the first time that our nice crime family got themselves somehow able to influence what a reporter might say or not say.
Yeah. You know, and it's also interesting. There is one report, there's one article out there. It's by Gary LaFanche, I believe. It was in the St. Catherine Standard. I think it was in 1999. And his whole article is about how the Buffalo crime family is working with these biker groups, and that there's a new mafia. Actually, the title of the article is "Bikers Now Married to the Mob." A new mafia crime lord rules the Golden Horseshoe, says a CISC report. And so that's a Canadian intelligence service. I can't remember exactly what that is, but it's basically the Canadian FBI, their intelligence operations there in Canada. And it's really interesting because the article actually in 1999 talks about, and this is a quote, the powerful Todaro Buffalo crime family, which is in total opposite of what Lee Coppola was saying in 98 after the Papalia hit. And and here's the really, really interesting part, okay? And here's the part that, wow, if it is true, this really changes a whole lot of our understanding of the Buffalo crime family. LaFletcher writes, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, he writes that the Todaro family at that point in 1998, because of their cooperation with these biker groups, that the family now controls, get this, Niagara, Hamilton, Toronto, and Montreal, through a shaky alliance with all of these groups. Now, that is significant, because if they control Montreal and Toronto, just think of the ports and the trafficking that they could do. You know, we got to go back to and look at history here, because it's long been established, at least reported, that the Bonanno family had great ties to the Montreal area, and that the Rizzutos were part of the Bonanno's Montreal Alt faction. And going back when these drug trafficking routes were first kind of established, probably in the late 50s, maybe before that, who knows, but you know, the reports that the actual Appalachian meeting was about carving up who gets what as far as Canada and drug trafficking and those different types of things. But Joe Bonanno and Steven Magadino, they were cousins. And, you know, Magadino had Toronto, Bonanno had Montreal, and Magadino constantly wanted Montreal. Matter of fact, there's a book called Heist. It's by Schneider, I believe, and he talks about the fact that even back then, Magadino thought Montreal was his. And I think that's really interesting, because we've always thought that that's totally been Bonanno, but I think maybe things aren't as clear as everybody has thought. I'm not saying that it wasn't, but I'm saying, man, this is stuff that we need to look into and to investigate. Does that all that make sense? It sounds like I'm covering a ton of stuff, and I don't know if people can even follow.
It's a lot of interesting information, and at least you give names and sources where people can, you know, look for themselves, too. And speaking of that, sir, what's your Twitter handle, if we may?
Yeah. My Twitter is, you know, if you look me up, I'm at Mob Buffalo on Twitter. At Mob Buffalo. I'm known as Buffalo Mob on there. And, you know, this is just something I'm interested in. So, you know, I post things on there from time to time with things that I'm learning or things that are going on, and those various types of things. So yeah, at Mob Buffalo, you know, give me a follow, and you know, I don't purport to be the most knowledgeable person out there. I think there are other people that know a whole lot more than me, but I do kind of look through everything and try and put some stuff together, raise some questions for people to think about, and that's really what I'm about doing on there.
Absolutely,
trying to let people know what's going on here in Buffalo. So yeah,
we have a lot more to talk about. But first, a break for a commercial announcement. Before we talk about the Buffalo crime family in Vegas, which I'm absolutely fascinated in, I'd like to encourage anyone out there to do two things for me today. Three things. One, go to your local Hooters and eat good food, because they have good food with great service. Second, if you go to Vegas, please stay at Hooters Hotel and Casino. And third, please, 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 please follow the great Vegas Aces, and they do a lot of cool things, which include teach people how to play hell games before you go to Vegas, and follow Heather there as well. Thank you for allowing me to show out some good old things for some great groups and people I find follow on Twitter valuable. Now back to our show. So you mentioned earlier that there's the people in Buffalo also had connections into Vegas. Can you go into a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, I am really starting to research that a little bit more. I've just recently received, through a FOIA request, some documents about Joe Todaro Sr. and his early years. And the thing is, about the time he was becoming the boss, when he was firmly Frangia Moore's underboss, and that would have been the early 80s. He was working with Detroit and some other mob families. It looks like he's always had some pretty good connections with Philadelphia. He's had connections down in California, connections with the Genovese and Detroit. But anyway, it looks like he was really working to take a silent partnership with them in a casino down there in Vegas. And then, you know, later on, we learned that the Buffalo Mob actually has a pretty big cocaine trafficking operation out of Vegas that's revealed in the 90s. At that time, even the Buffalo News and some news organizations in the Vegas area talk about the fact that Buffalo is the number one presence in Vegas in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, there's actually a May 6, 1990 article that says Buffalo Mob holds sway over Vegas, and it says that the Buffalo's organized crime family is considered the most influential in the mob's open city of Las Vegas. So I don't think people maybe really knew that or understood that. And you've got the drug trafficking, the cocaine coming up probably from Mexico through Vegas into the Buffalo region, and probably from here even going up into Canada and the Toronto region. And matter of fact, around that time frame, it's actually a few years later, we've got some documents where Joe and Dominic Violi, you know, Dom, it was revealed to be Buffalo's underboss just a few months ago, but where they are charged, I believe Joe actually gets a sentence for bringing the cocaine up into there. There's also some articles talking about how this cocaine was crossing the river, the Niagara River, into Canada. So a lot of people believe that the drug trafficking happens from Canada into the United States, and that's probably true early on, but especially cocaine, starting probably late 80s, early 90s, we were probably importing up into Canada versus the other way around.
Incredible. I think obviously we know that the control of the different pipelines into countries are very, very valuable, be it Mexico and the United States, the Great Lakes into Canada. You know, I think it's huge.
Yeah.
I can understand why Buffalo could easily be one of the gateways.
Wow. Yeah, we got an international border here, and I think that's something that a lot of people have overlooked is the fact that there is an international border, and I think that has kept Buffalo as a crime family relevant when others, you know, especially outside of the New York metropolitan area, have truly been in decline as a result. I'm not saying Buffalo hasn't declined, but, you know, I do think this international border has kept us viable as a crime family.
Yeah, I can see it. I mean, so talking of the different things that the Buffalo crime family might be a part of, we've talked about cocaine. What else are they doing? It's some racketeering, labor racketeering.
Yeah, cocaine, labor racketeering back in the day, I don't know if they still are. You know, there's a lot of rumors still related to the Buffalo Billion scandal here and some possible connections.
What's the Buffalo Billion scandal?
Buffalo Billion was a Governor Cuomo here. You know, Buffalo.
And you need to speak up, Tony, if you could, please.
Yeah. Buffalo has been a very depressed city, and Governor Cuomo has sent some state help and, you know, sent a lot of money our way to revitalize the Buffalo area. And that's called the Buffalo Billion. A lot of money invested in the Solar City complex for Tesla down here and some other things like that. And, you know, there's a developer here that his family is known to have strong ties, his father especially, to the Buffalo mob. And actually, this developer, he's mentioned in a RICO in the early 80s when he served as a trustee of Local 210. I got to say, you know, there has been nothing to connect him now to the Buffalo mob, but it raises questions. It's something I think people are interested in. Oh, wow, you know, if that happened back then, and we've got something like this going on where he's been indicted and, you know, convicted of bribery and bid rigging. Those are typical mafia rackets back in the day. And yes, like Fino said, the leadership that Todaro had put in place back then is back in charge of the local. Well, that just raises all kinds of questions. You know what I'm saying? So it's something interesting as far as all of that goes. Yeah,
right.
Back to the Vegas thing. In the 90s, from what I understand, Buffalo sent folks down there to learn collections rackets and telemarketing schemes. And
I'm sorry.
So in the early 90s, there is a big bust of some telemarketers in the Buffalo area, and it included like Gallo, who was related to Buffalo. It even included Todaro's grandson, who now, you know, really runs Lenovo Pizzeria. And he was kind of part of that. And people have always said he's never been a part of the rackets. Well, he may not really be a part of the family. Who knows? But he did take place in some of the rackets. And he's mentioned in some of these telemarketing things as being a part of that. Never arrested. And again, the Todaros have never been arrested. They have never been convicted of anything. So you can't even say that they are for sure the ones who lead the Buffalo Cosa Nostra. So, you know, but we all kind of know that they do. So,
well, yeah. It's all interesting. It's interesting for speculation. And it's curious because when we talk about the mafia, right? You know, I think bootlegging. I can understand the skim. I can understand those things. The last thing I had to chuckle was to think of mafia people setting up a telemarketing organization. But yet, that makes perfect sense because they don't care what crime they're involved in, how they get their money. You know, it's not to them. All they want is at the end of the day, the dollar bill.
That's exactly it. They just want to. They want the money, and they're going to look for any and all ways possible to do that. And in that sense, I think the mafia is very adaptable because if there is a way to make money, they're going to find it. And maybe those ways to make money are not on the radar,
right?
Like they typically were in the past. And so I think they are much more involved in white collar crime than they are in the blue collar kind of things that they used to be involved with. And, you know, one of the things that I've heard over and over again is that the Buffalo crime family has been involved in healthcare fraud
recent,
and that they've been working with other families in defrauding healthcare companies. I'm not sure exactly how it all works, but they're definitely involved in healthcare fraud in some way, from what I understand. So,
right, and I understand in my background, after my daughter passed from a heroin overdose, and you look into what all that happened, stuff with heroin, the clinics that fix the, you know, through treatments, and like, you find out of all the scams. There was an interesting article I posted on Facebook a few days ago on how there's such a thing as rehab scams, where they find an addict, they put them through one clinic, get them re-addicted, send them to another clinic under the control, all being billed to a government agency or nonprofit, and it's big money. It's big money, big money.
Yeah. You know, there's all kinds of ways to scam people, and you know, it's not just the mafia that is doing it. It's all kinds of other organizations as well. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the days of thinking that the organized crime are done by people in suits with Italian last names should not be thought of, because every kind of organization is doing organized crime, be it, you know, we know we have stuff with the cartels, which is primarily Mexican or Hispanic background. We got the classic Italian mafia. We got the Russian mafia now. Even Russian mafia is big in Milwaukee, all places. And they're claimed to fame as human trafficking, along with the motorcycle gangs that are trafficking girls in strip clubs. It's from what I understand from what law enforcement officers I know, it's a big problem. And that's why I find it fascinating that the Buffalo crime family is working with Hell's Angels, because they're good muscle, right? And if they're doing stuff with cocaine, well, I'm going to go and send tough people with my shipment. And I'm thinking Hell's Angels don't need much of a excuse to shoot someone, right? And most people won't screw with the Hell's Angels if they can avoid it. If only not because they might be the toughest people in the world, but they have that reputation. And sometimes a bad reputation in that matter is worth more than a legion of armed troops.
No, you're totally right about that. And it's interesting. There was a big conviction of a local outlaw biker gang here in Buffalo a little while back. And, you know, there's no evidence that that biker gang based here had anything to do with the Buffalo crime family, but just knowing the history and the way that they have worked with outlaw biker gangs in the past, again, it raises questions. You know, it makes you wonder, it makes you think about those different types of things. And speaking of the human trafficking, just the other day, I believe 2 days ago maybe, there was a personal watercraft that got stuck on the ice on the Niagara River. And some of the folks were able to walk across that scary ice to Beaver Island, but some were stranded out there. And so the Border Patrol was called out to help. And it was revealed that they were trafficking humans across the Canadian border from Canada to the United States. The driver of that personal watercraft was Canadian, and he was bringing over some folks from some different countries, not Canadians, smuggling them into the United States. So that just makes you wonder what that's all about. And again, that's, you know, maybe not mob related, it might be, who knows, but it's interesting. There's all kinds of organized crime that's out there. And I really, that's one of the things that fascinated me is, wow, I just can't believe how much of this stuff really does go on. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And then, of course, if we talk about government corruption, it's needed to successfully run any type of organized crime outfit. Ours are the Buffalo Mafia people, right? Are they selling or renting out their political connections so the Russian mob can do some human trafficking, or the Hispanic gang and cartel members can move cocaine? You know, are they renting out their judges, their police officers, whatever else information, or help to get offer for a fee so other groups can have that ability? I don't know. It sounds interesting.
It's interesting, and it's very interesting that you bring that up, because actually if you look on the Canadian side, it appears that, again, the Violi brothers, who, again, the Latino family, the Violis, have had long-standing ties to the Buffalo crime family, probably a crew of the Buffalo crime family. But it appears that they have had corrupt police in their pocket for some time. I think there's police intelligence from 2002 talking about this. And so you're right. They very much could be using those things, especially maybe on the Canadian side for that. Now, I think once you start to talk about that on the American side and actually in Buffalo, people are like, oh, I don't know about that, you know. And because, again, there's this understanding or this thought that the Buffalo crime family has been diminished, and they don't have those connections or those things anymore. And I want to read what some people wrote back in 2000 and around 2007. There was a murder, and it involved the Vacantes and some other folks. And Messini was the one that was murdered by a Vacante. And they were all tied into a drug dealing trafficking group. And you know, somebody, and I think this represents the way a lot of folks in Buffalo feel. Somebody wrote this about that fact. They said, Buffalo, New York is and always will be one of the most corrupt cities in America, because there are too many people in high places who have family ties to drug trafficking, gambling, and murder. This goes back at least, say, to three generations of Italian mobsters who have close-knit relatives and have managed to reach every position of power available in Buffalo. Mayor,
sure.
Police chief, district attorney, judges, and you know, they don't mention the names, but when you do look, there does appear to be, you know, lots of connections to names who have been associated with the Buffalo mob and people in high places. And again, that's not to say that these folks are all corrupt and, you know, were corrupted and just, you know, doing whatever the mob wanted. It's not saying that at all. But it does suggest that there is the possibility for corruption of some of those folks in some of these places, especially given the fact that it seems a lot of these folks tend to walk on a lot of these things that come up and don't get looked at maybe the way other people would. And are these things get dismissed as saying, hey, this is not a mob hit, but it's just a drug trafficking group. But when you look at all the names involved in that organization, they are family names that have long been associated with the Buffalo mob. So, yeah.
And going back to the Buffalo Billion, right, and that would fall to me under the lines of political corruption and political mismanagement. Here, instead of seeing, we have something called Machinery Row, and its development was going to do so much for the city, and instead it's turned out to be a disaster. The $6 million plus they spent on it, evidence that says that the brownfield repair was billed out twice, that people made deals, the developer made the property owners that he bought properties from with city money kick back to him 10% of that purchase price. All kinds of weird things that raises all kinds of questions. And when an alderman did, she got in trouble because, well, how dare she tell her constituents what was going on? How dare she ask for a records request, right? And to me, if I'm a criminal, I've seen my uncles, my grandfather, maybe other brothers and sisters go to jail for stuff. I know that's me being arrested for being a political crook are far less than it is for me being arrested from selling cocaine. And that might be something I may be looking into doing.
Well, I kind of missed that last part right there.
I said if I saw my relative go to prison for cocaine, it'd be a lot harder for me to go to prison for doing political corruption things. That would most likely be the way I would go.
I think you might be onto something as far as all of that goes. And
right.
You know, part of what I just want to do is just raise awareness that these things still go on, whether it's Italian organized crime or any other form of organized crime that's out there. And, that's really kind of what my Twitter is about trying to put this news and this information out there so people can see the corruption and they can see the way things are being manipulated by politicians, no matter what side of the aisle you are on, by what appears to be about the Buffalo crime family and different other, drug trafficking organizations and things that are happening in the city.
Absolutely.
And so if
so
you want to
give,
go ahead.
I was going to ask you what your Twitter was again, sir.
Yes, I was just actually going to give that. It's @mobbuffalo, @mobbuffalo, and that's where I kind of put all of that stuff up on and look through and I'll raise some questions about it and that kind of thing. And again, I think all of this recent news makes us have to go back and look into things that have happened in the past. And I keep hearing people saying over and over and over again that the Buffalo crime family hasn't done anything for the past, 10, 15, 20 years. But then as I go back and look, even in Las Vegas in like 2012, I believe it was, I don't know the exact day or the exact year, there's this what I would call a homeowners association scheme that's going on. And, I'm trying to go back and see, is there stuff that's related to the Buffalo mob? And there's an article from an investigative team called More Targets in the HOA Conspiracy. And that article's from 2012. And part of it says that there's a gentleman named Paul Fitelli. And Fitelli name is a name that's known here in Buffalo. He found himself bouncing like a ping pong ball between two IT cameras. The HOA mess is not his first trouble with the law. The FBI thinks he's affiliated with the Buffalo mob.
Oh, wow.
That's back in 2012 when they were saying that everything in Buffalo was totally dead. But yet we have this article from Las Vegas at that time saying, oh, there's a guy that's involved, at least has been involved with the Buffalo mob. He was involved with some of the cocaine trafficking in the late 80s and early 90s. And one of his associates out there, another individual that was involved in all of that with this HOA scandal, is Joe Bravo. And what is really, really interesting about him is the fact that he was convicted in a cocaine ring that involved the Buffalo crimes in the late 80s, early 90s. I think he was convicted in 1993. But what was very, very interesting is I found out that he and his lawyer, I forget his lawyer's name right now, but they actually owned an airport in the Baja region, Baja California region of Mexico, and had ties, you know, they're not allowed to do that. And so why does a former, you know, Italian mobster or associate who got ties to the Mexican drug cartels and his lawyer own an airport in, you know, in Baja, California, they're not even allowed to legally in Mexico for that,
right.
You know. So, I mean, these are all things that just, wow, okay. And this is, 2012, 2013, is there still, are they still part of the Buffalo crime family? Are they still involved in drug trafficking? Is that what the airport is all about? You know, it just raises all kinds of questions.
Absolutely fascinating stuff. And I think that a man like yourself, sir, have years of looking forward into giving us this information that you know because of your activities and the activities that you do in the city of New York and other places in the world that you sometimes go to. I think it's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting stuff, and you know, it makes me wonder why other people aren't as interested and aren't looking to follow up on some of these things. So,
well,
it's really interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
Where do you start? I mean, when you start with it's like one, like an onion, right? You peel off one layer, there's now another layer. Now there's another layer. Or the rabbit hole that you go down into. And my God, where does the rabbit hole lead to? And what's the difference between what might be a conspiracy of different groups working together to run, say, drugs in the United States, and what is it, what is it, a whack job conspiracy, right?
Yeah.
The thing is that, I mean, this, and it takes people like yourself, if I may do a shout out to Christian Cipollini, you know, the crime writer that does stuff about Lucky Luciano and the like, takes people like yourself to go into the situation to tell the difference between what's really going on and the fake shit, the conspiracy.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's one of the things that I want to just say, you know, I am not saying that this still exists, like these connections in Las Vegas. But I will say that because these articles have been written and the recent news, wow, that's an awfully big coincidence. And, you know, needs to be looked into, those various different types of things. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, right now, absolutely. And now we look to the FBI and we look to other things to do this investigation for us, and maybe they are, for all we know. But at the same time, there's only so many FBI agents, and there's so much stuff going on. And I know, in my opinion, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's my understanding that the organized crime elements do not like it when people say these things are going on. They don't like to be exposed to the light of day. And maybe the things that we do in our own little ways helps a lot to slow them down a bit.
You know, that's really, I think, part of the reason I do what I do is, you know, I look around and I see a community where I live that is just devastated with the drugs and drug trafficking, all kinds of arrests in my area. And so, you know, a lot of this is, you know, there's this interest in the mafia. But the other is, you know what, I want to do my best to expose the corruption that's in the area where I live to make it a better place and all of those different types of things. So
that's
really probably the number one reason I do what I do. Yeah.
Right. That's the best job we can do is do whatever it is we think best to fix problems. And I want to give you a shout-out and my great thanks for doing what you do, sir. It's been enjoyable talking to you today. I look forward to doing more of that, and both not only on the show, I hope to have you on at least a few more times, but to read the stuff that you put out on Twitter. It means a lot to me.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. And yeah, it's been fun doing the show. I've enjoyed talking to you. So definitely, reach out and we'll put together a time, and we'll talk
again.
Absolutely.
Now, one last thing before we go is the stuff going on, the recent shooting in Staten Island. Does that have anything to do with what's going on in, perhaps in Philadelphia and St. Louis, or is that the speculation diatribe?
You know, right now I don't think we really have any idea what is happening with that shooting in Staten Island. If I'm to guess, it is mob related. It's a mob hit. It looks like they're sending a message. That's the way it appears, the way it happened. Is there a connection to these other East Coast families? I don't know. Is it an internal matter? I don't know. Is it related to drug trafficking and all of that? You know, I just find it interesting that, somebody mentioned to me about a week, maybe 2 weeks ago, I can't remember for sure, but they said, war on the East Coast, because there are some people that are feeling left out in the money that's being made in trafficking. And so, just the fact that somebody mentioned that a couple of weeks ago and we have this, it may not be related at all, but man, it makes you think. So,
and then, of course, we read about the trial at El Chapo, right? And they talk about Pemex losing control of railroad cars that's filled with drugs. And it's like, and so we have a man being killed in Staten Island, and God only knows why, right? We can speculate. And we're all concerned about that, which is something we need to be concerned about. But we have cartels moving railroad cars full of drugs from Mexico and the United States, which has to be the corporation of Pemex, which means, in my opinion, the corporation with the Mexican government, because you do not lose control of a rail car and say, gee, what happened to a rail car? I don't know. Did we park it someplace and forget where we lost it? No.
Yeah, I know. I don't know a whole lot about all of that, but, yeah, you raised some good questions yourself. And I think that's why people like you and I exist, and why we do the things that we do, raise the questions and to get people thinking and to, raise awareness for the different sorts of corruption that's out there. So, yeah.
Absolutely, sir. Well, again, I appreciate your time today, Tony. I hope I gave you enough kudos at the beginning of the show to vent some more dynamite from being placed in my car. I mean, it's a pain in the ass to get away from. I do thank you, sir, and I wish you the very, very best of luck of today and the near future and until we talk again.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed being on the show. And, have me back anytime.
Yes, sir. Thank you again. Have a great day, and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, bye. What a great show with Tony. I wouldn't even try to pronounce his name because, every time you pronounce his name, mispronounce his name, your street tax payments go up. And I got to tell you, if you think paying taxes to the federal government's bad, try paying taxes to them out. It's a hell of a thing, right? Hell of a thing. But I want to thank him for being on the show. Great conversation. We could talk for hours. I hope to bring him on relatively soon and perhaps have a round table with him and Christian Cipriani and maybe Ron Fino. That would be a cool round table to do. We'll see what might be doing with that. But again, next week we're doing a show on the Dixie Mafia. When we started that sequence with that deep dive on Wednesday, we'll be doing a show on the element of the relation between myth and legend and truth between the mafia and the music industry. And, of course, we'll be talking to the expert on D.B. Cooper all next week. Until then, buy your lunch at Hooters, best place in town. Talk to you later. Bye.